Hello, everyone. Good morning. My name is Wen Chow, and I am a campus ministry leader of OSU, representing IFI. And today, actually, several of us are going to share. We're going to have Jerry as well. Jerry is also campus staff of OSU. And Christina right here, campus staff of OSU. So today's topic is, this is the Generous Hospitality 102, because it's advanced. It's how to welcome students into your heart. And before we begin, maybe just let each one of us do a little self-introduction, our experience of hospitality with students, and then we'll go into the topic a little more. Okay. So myself, I think it's a new face for a lot of you. I just joined IFI about a year ago, so woohoo! Yes, so I'm Chinese American. I was born in China and I grew up in America. And so I was educated here. And then God kind of like opened the door, sent me out to other parts of the nations for study. And then I worked for about 10 years. And then God also again sent me out to Asia for missions. So I was in Asia for 7 years for mission work, based in Taiwan, with some of my stories going to tie with that. So myself, I have experienced hospitality. I've been hosted by many people as missionary, and I've been hosted as international student. Oh, by the way, I also was an international student in Europe, and I was in Asia before. So I know how it feels, kind of like being hosted. But also, I have hosted people like missionaries and international students. So it kind of like, I see both sides. And so hospitality is, it's really one of my passions and is very valuable in missions. So I'm gonna share that a little more later on. But I'm gonna give to Christina to also introduce herself.
Hello, my name is Christina and I am also an American, Chinese American, you say? Yeah, but I was born in U.S. all my life, stay here all my life. And I was introduced to international student ministry in college, having Chinese friends. And yeah, that's how I started to interact with international students. And God led me here to IFI.
So my name is Jerry Shellhaus. I am an American. born and raised. I've been working with IFI since 2008. I went to Tukula Falls College and majored in missions, cross-cultural communications, as well as Bible and theology. Was hoping to go overseas as a missionary, but God changed my plans and direction and has brought the mission field to me instead. So I'm married. I have a daughter that we adopted from China, who has also been very instrumental in our ministry. We try to minister as a team. We have a Friday night Bible discussion group in our home every Friday. Gwen cooks. Eliana sits there and talks to the students. I remember when we first adopted Eliana, the Chinese students would see her, and it was like a magnet for them to come to us. So God has a plan and purpose for everything, but we're excited about being in the ministry, about being able to host students and develop relationships with them.
So, so as you can see, three of us are somewhat diverse. We want to bring a little bit of diversity, like, you know, internet, Asian American and bicultural, and also American. So you have in the panel today, workshop, that we can ask questions, can ask Jerry, can ask Christina, myself. So this is really open for discussion and Q&A. Since many of you also have a lot of experience in hospitality already, and, you know, we'd love to hear from you as well, your experience and what worked. Let's see. So first, I'm so thankful. I was going to say, maybe I'll just cover why international student ministry is important. But Rich has paved the way. Woohoo! I'm so glad. So, yes, it's biblical, it's strategic, and it's within your reach, and also resourceful, remember you said. So I want to touch a little bit on strategic, because it actually has quite a bit to do with why I come back to the U.S. Because when I was in Taiwan, my ministry was going, the people was engaging with the Taiwanese, and I met quite a few people who were once international students in America. One was a church planter. He came to faith in the U.S. as an international student. He was asking a lot of questions because he's a researcher, you know, like you're supposed to ask a lot of questions. So it was very difficult for the church, but the church stuck with him and answered him a lot of questions. So he finally, intellectually and emotionally, he was convinced Jesus is the Christ. So later on in his life, he shared, and he just grew in America as Christian. And later on, God called him to go back to Taiwan. And he became an elder of a church, and he had a vision to do a church planting. He built a very successful church. We visited him, his church. And then his church not only ministered to the Taiwanese, but also the immigrants come to Taiwan, workers, that he also has a separate group. So his vision is beyond his own group, but it's also other groups in Asia that still need the gospel. So that was very inspiring for me. Another one was, it was a recent returnee from the U.S. as well, wife and a husband is a couple, and they were in the U.S., they came to faith through church, through volunteers. They would show great hospitality, and they were cared for, and they were also being discipled. And later on, they came to faith, they grew as a couple, and they also caught the vision to be sharing the gospel everywhere they go. And God called them, well, go back to Taiwan. And the wife was a professor at a very well-known university in Taiwan. And the husband was a researcher. And they were using their sphere of influence to share the gospel with the students. Well, not the students, but invite them, the students, to their home to do Bible study. And the husband was sharing the gospel to his coworkers. So, and I asked them, because I was involved with them in the ministry, and at the end I asked them, so what was one thing that really helped you keep going doing what you do? And they say, it's the care. It's the care of the brothers and sisters in the U.S. They keep encouraging us. They show hospitality. They loved on us. So it was like, it really struck me, like, hospitality is so important. Because they felt the love, and they're able to give it out. And then not only with the love, but they caught the vision of the gospel. It's like, it goes hand in hand. And so, yeah. So here's a little story adding to riches. Yeah. So your work is very important. You just, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, I don't know, like making a meal or picking up students, like, is it gonna go anywhere? It's actually you investing into the future. You never know what God's going to do with the students in your home that you show hospitality to. And so you're leaving a lasting impact. Perhaps someday you know, someday you may not. Maybe in heaven you will know. Yeah. Okay. So today, let's kind of get back, regroup a little bit. It's like, okay, we can always learn, right, like hospitality. I'm still learning. I've been doing hospitality pretty much giving and receiving, obviously, for a long time. But I felt like there's still so many components I'm learning. So today I'm going to share a little bit the cultural aspect. Even though I'm bicultural and also international, I'm still learning myself. And I want to share that with you, what I'm learning. And also the practical, we need the practical as well. How to, you know, welcome the students to your heart faster, right? Just cut down some of the unnecessary, like, mistakes. it's just faster. And so Jerry and Christina are also going to share more on that. Okay. So cultural knowledge, and I know a lot of you have gone through orientation training, and I think you are very aware of there are generally this like two cultures, right? And what I love about, I want to talk about this book a little bit. It uses a reference in terms of cultural knowledge. It's because the author wrote this book. She had traveled to many, she's a missionary. She had traveled to many countries. She was from an organization I was part of, YWAM. And she wrote this book to observe different countries, different cultures, and she grouped them into two parts. So it makes life easier for us when we have like 100 countries at least in the OSU. Like, how do you juggle with all that? But she really grouped it into two. So it makes it easier. And this book actually was used for training for the young people for cross-cultural mission as well. So even other missionaries use this for teaching. So I thought this is something I can share with you. It's called Foreign to Familiar. I have a couple copies here. Later on we'll have Q&A. If you answer correctly, we give them out for free.
Everybody's awake now.
Okay, you wake, so you're going to have to answer questions. So I have also traveled about 25 countries, not a lot compared to her. But if this book really helped me sort out as well the differences. And what she has said, okay, yes, it's a cold climate culture and hot climate. She just divided that. So cold climate, it's very similar to what we have learned. It's like task-oriented culture, direct, individual, privacy, low-contact planning. I think a lot of you are familiar with this. What would be one country you think of? Yes! U.S., Canada, yes. European, yes. And then the hot climates, relational, indirect, group identity, sharing, high contact, spontaneous. India. Yeah.
So when it talks about the low and high context, can you explain what that refers to? I always get confused about what that means.
Okay, low high context is, I would say in something like this, an example. I have a little diagram. Right. Low context, an example, it's like everybody's about equal. The leader is equal to everybody else. You know, like, just like us, it's like, even I'm a leader, we're pretty much equal, right? Like, we have a role, leader's a role. But high context, like in China or India, it's like the leader is quite elevated. You look up to the leader. The leader makes the decision, and you follow. Yeah. I have a little fun book also to share with you later. This is like coming from there. Yeah. Okay. Get back to. Okay. So, the good news is 95% of OSU international students are from here.
Yeah.
Yes, right? We don't have to like, okay, you don't have to sort out, are you high context, low context? This is, I think it's gonna help you. 95% of international students are from the hot climate culture. So Chinese, Indians, Africans, Malaysians, Taiwanese, South Americans, Middle East, Egyptians, Arabics, Muslims, majority, it would be from here. So you want to spend your time understand this group because majority of students probably from here. I mean, there are some, of course, this is a generalization, and there's some not part of the generalization. Like you might find students also very like, you know, very direct, they could be Chinese, they're very direct, could be very individualistic. And it's okay, because there's always, you know, like somebody is not really exactly part of that generalization. But generally, this would be a good place to go and to understand. Okay? So today, which is the time, I'm going to share with a few things from my, in context of hospitality. It's like, how do we reach to them so that's easier? I'm going to touch upon more about sharing, inclusion, and spontaneous. So if you have students who come from this group, most of you do, sharing with them is so important. Sharing your food, sharing your activities. So if a student comes to your home, the best thing you probably say to them is, okay, here's the food, it's in the kitchen, eat whatever you want to eat. Make yourself at home. Because when I would say, but anybody from this culture, like myself and the friends I talk to from that culture, it's like you're able to go in somebody's home and really, I can eat anything here. Like, I can open the refrigerator and not have to worry about, like, what's yours and what's mine. This is a huge part, food. Food is a huge component of cultures in hot climate context. And inclusion is also important. If you go to activities, invite them, come along. If your family is going to do things and the student is sitting there, don't just like, you know, oh, we're making our plans. But say, hey, we're making plans. You want to come alongside. And instead of like, we're going to do this, you're going to stay home. They may be politely say, oh, okay, it's fine. But inside, it's love to be involved. It's because it's a family, you know. It's like very family-oriented, group-oriented. Like, you know, like, invite me to do what you do. You know, like, you are the group. We want to be part of it. So this is so important. And for me, like, I've been host by these two sisters. I went to their home, and they like, when, make yourself at home. It's everything here. Eat whatever you want. And, you know, like, we're not structured. Just relax. And that, to me, is a huge blessing. Yeah. And, but if I went also another trip with another, it was another country, and they asked, and I joined them for, it was an outing. And then they invited me to go. When I went, and then they bought their food, and I was like, so I just met them. So they bought their food, they didn't really ask me. So I was feeling a little awkward. It was like, so it's like, especially meeting the first time, it's like, buy my food. And it makes me feel like I'm part of you. I'm welcome, and I'm cared for. I'm provided for. Yeah. So you may think, oh, that's a lot of money, right? Because I struggle with that, too, because I host. And I was like, that's a lot of money if I, like, a student come and I have to, like, anything I want in my cabinet. That's a lot of money. You never know how much you're going to eat. Because students do eat a lot. So what I do practically, I actually set our budget separately. Like, this is the kingdom budget for hospitality. Each month. And I know this is the amount I put in there. They eat, it's going to come out from this budget. So if you plan ahead of time, you don't feel stressed out. And you can just focus, you know, just eat. And, all right, and the last thing we'll talk about, spontaneous. Spontaneous is because the group culture, like in Asia or in, we say in Africa, I went to Africa too, it's group culture. People don't make plans to meet up with you. Like, they don't call, like, let's meet up a week later or a month later. We just drop by. Mm-hmm. We just drop by and they say, hey, you want to hang out, right? Or you want to go eat, do something? Or like, I'm kind of bored, I'll just sit in your house. Or something like that. So it's very normal. And I miss that part of Asia. Because it's like, oh, you always have somebody around you. And being in America is lonely. Because you have to make plans a month ahead. My friends in New Jersey have to make plans for the month ahead to hang out. It's yeah. So it's that cultural gap. So I'm still praying how that's going to work even for me here. But it's understanding, like, maybe something can be spontaneous. You know, like Friday night, if you could say, hey, my friend, maybe we'll just call him out. Hey, what are you doing? You know, like, you want to go out to do something? And you never know the response. Like, yesterday, I was writing this, preparing this. I was like, maybe I thought about a student. So I text her. I was like, hey, what are you doing tonight? Because, you know, I have to apply this to myself. What are you doing tonight? And then she texts back later. It's like, oh, I'm going to this event at OSU. You want to come? It's like, ooh, students invite me to go, right? That's, like, exciting, yeah. So I was like, okay. But later on, like, she didn't have a ticket, so we had to make plan. Like, maybe we'll do something else. Let's eat. So we were ending up going to eat, and it was a fun time. Yeah. So it was nice. It was nice for her. It was spontaneous, right? And then I also enjoyed it because it was, like, spontaneous. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, just to be fair, too, you know, we do live in a Western culture, and our lives are, and I'm not saying this bad, but I'm just saying, yeah, our culture, we do need to be here in order to move on with life, right? But we can also move in the direction, add a little bit of this in your life, add a little of this, because Jesus actually is both. He's not completely cold climate. He's not completely hot. He's test-oriented because he has to be at the cross. You know, if he's with people all the time, he's not going to be there. So he has to get this done, right? He's direct sometimes. He tells the people what they want to hear, need to hear. But sometimes he tells parables, right? And he's individual. Sometimes he needs us a long time. And a lot of time, he's with 5,000 people feeding them, right? So for us, it's like he has privacy for a long, you know, long time. And he also shares what he has. Low context, he's with the disciples. He's with them. He's not saying, hey, look at me. But there is time he needs to be speaking. He needs to be their teacher. He needs to have authority. And he's has to make plan. God's big story is a plan, right? We have to do that. But there's also spontaneity. God gives surprises, right? So I guess for us, it's like we hear, and you know, like it's okay. We can move toward a little bit here. Ask God for wisdom, how to do that. And we can learn this from students as well, from the hot context climate. And have fun. Have fun exploring. Have fun just through hospitality. You can test it out, see how it works, and to another level. And you never know how that's going to touch the student's life. Yes. Yes. Absolutely. Okay, so do you want to say this to Mike, or should I repeat it myself? Okay. So, yeah, so Guy said had a good point. It's like a lot of students from here, so they're very spontaneous, and probably some of it is probably immature too, but spontaneous. It's a lot of spontaneous, and sometimes they might change their mind. And we have to be okay with it, yeah. And perhaps we can go along with it and do it with them, yeah, right? Did I capture what you said? Okay. So you say indirect and indirect. Like if you want to get to know them, do you ask them the direct questions like how?
But like with indirect, you know,
Oh, tell me about your journey. Where you from? Yeah. Yeah, what's a good example to ask to learn about them? Do you have something to share about that? Or please see your name and here, let me hand you the mic.
A new place like America, asking direct questions may not work because you're in a country where you're not, we are looking, you know, totally different culture, totally different way of saying things. You're new here. So it's better to get to know a foreign student. Just leave things open, you know, communicate, do things. And time will come where they will open up themselves and tell you all you want to know about them. But when you start doing something like you're interviewing them or asking them direct questions, they don't know what to say. You know, but they may call their home and say, well, this lady or this family, that they ask me too much, blah, blah, blah. But if we leave the foreign student to get familiar with them, just do things and learn them until they feel comfortable, then they can open up. And when they open up, they tell you everything you want to know without...
Okay. Yeah. So I thank you. I would say it's okay to ask questions, but probably not a lot in the very beginning. Yeah. Yeah. And...
So questions where you want to know whether a student likes or dislikes something would be a direct question. So do you like staying in the United States? That would be a direct question, which would not usually be answered directly. Even when we share the gospel, do you want to receive Christ? That's a direct question. And a lot of students, if they're not ready to receive Christ, then it's a very difficult question.
So with that, what would you suggest to say?
So, for example, instead of saying, do you like the United States, say, well, what have been some of the experiences you've had in the United States? And for about, like with regards to, do you want to receive Christ or are you ready to receive Christ, you might say, well, what has God been doing in your heart? And what do you see from what you've learned about Christ? What do you know? How do you see where you are right now? That type of thing.
Can I make a little comment on that?
Yeah, sure.
Because these foreign students, you don't know their background in as far as Christianity or not. So asking those things about Christ. When they blend in, I give an example. When I host one of the people that I host from China, she's a graduate student. I never mention anything about Christ or anything. I try to, you know, do something that she will be able to see. There's something about this lady. Until I invited her, I picked her up from the campus to come to Christmas concert, one of the December. And we were here, and then we sat together, you know, the program was going on, and then at some point she started saying something, like completing a statement before the people that the performers at this, and I was like, how did he even, she know anything about Christ? Because I don't want to do it at the early stage. I wanted her, taking her to church, taking her to events where she will hear different things, and until she start, you know, feeling comfortably, spiritually, and also praying. Because when you pray about a soul, and you sincerely pray for that soul to be saved, an opportunity, you know, I guarantee your opportunity will come. Yes. That, the, you know, that prayer will penetrate into her heart. So after she kept, you know, then I said, have you heard anything about Christ? She said, I read a lot about Christ. I read a lot of Bible, but I don't know what all those things mean.
Thank you. Okay. Yeah, we can have a lot of discussion in this one. I mean, welcome at the end of the workshop. And if some of you want to stay behind and chat more, we'd love to. Yeah. Okay. Right, so let's move on to the practical. Some of the practical is like in terms of showing generous hospitality to students and welcome them into your heart. Some practicals will be helpful. And Jerry is going to share more about that.
So there's two different kinds, basically, of icebreakers that you can have. If you're in a group, one of the things that I do, like if you're going on a trip to Washington, D.C., or you're taking a group up to Amish country or wherever you might go, you can play some easy name games. One of the things that you want to do at the very beginning with the group is to let them know each other. So there's a couple quick name games that I play. One would be, so tell me, you own a zoo, and tell me your name, and tell me the animal that's in your zoo that has that begins with the same sound as your name. So I usually start and say, my name is Jerry, and there's a jackal in my zoo. So then the next person goes, and he says, well, hi, Jerry. I'm glad that you have a jackal in your zoo. My name is Sally, and I have a snake in my zoo. And you go through the whole van so that by the time you get to the last person, they're all have it, just associating that animal with their name helps them to remember the name. And then I always go last, and they're all hoping I won't remember and make mistakes. But I'm usually actually pretty good. It's hard, though, when you're driving the van and the guy way in the back, and you're sort of, I have to pay attention to the road and look in the rearview mirror as to who's who. But anyway, so that's a name game that you can play. Another easy name game that you can play in a group would be to associate an adjective with your name. So I am Jocular Jerry. You are Silly Sally. You are whatever. So as they go through there, that, again, helps them learn each other's names. And then I will also, in a group, try to encourage them to get to know the person next to them so that they can introduce their neighbor or the person sitting next to them to the rest of the people in the group. So that just helps bring the group together. But there's another thing that you can do if you're in your home for an icebreaker, and again, in a group, a fun name game, and you have to have sort of a large amount of people for this, but you put half of the group on one side of the room, half of the group on the other side of the room, put a blanket up between them, and then somebody from this side comes up, somebody from that side comes up, and they've already introduced themselves, and then you drop the blanket, and whoever says the name first wins. And whoever loses has to go to the other side, or you can just keep track with points, however you want to do it. So there's different things that you can do in a group for icebreakers. When you're in an individual setting, it's a little bit different. And on an individual basis, I don't know that there are any quote-unquote icebreakers. But one of the things that I think is very important for all of us to really show good hospitality, to really develop that deeper relationship, which is what this seminar is about, is to develop good listening skills. So I just want to give you some quick tips on how to be a good listener. The first thing is probably the hardest thing. Well, maybe not. It is for some people, and the first thing is don't interrupt. So many times somebody, they're talking and you want to say something, and so you don't let them finish their thought. You don't let them talk and get their whole thing out. So let them completely communicate both verbally, but then watch for their nonverbal communication as well. Get the complete message from them. This is probably, I think, the hard one for most Americans, and that is don't be thinking about what you want to say next while they're talking. That is so hard because when they're talking, we're thinking, it's just natural, at least for us as Americans, to be thinking, well, what do I want to say? How do I want to respond to that? It's hard, but don't do it. Be engaged, be an attentive, active listener, and let them talk. Give them, the third thing, give them your soul and undivided attention. Try not to, if you're in a Panera Bread, don't be looking around at everything that's happening around you. If they're in your home, turn off the TV. Whatever. Try not to be distractive. Give them your undivided attention, keeping eye contact with them. And that would be the fourth thing, is maintain eye contact. Look them eye to eye. Lean forward, show them that you're engaged, that you are really listening to them. That's very important. Fifth, show genuine interest and concern. Show them that you're following them. Nod as they're talking. Okay, I'm with you. Smile. Say, uh-huh, yeah, I understand, sure. Those types of things. Another thing that is hard for some people is to avoid the nonverbal cues of disagreement, shock, disapproval. So sometimes, I mean, these students are not Christians, and they may share things with us that, oh, man. If that comes across in our nonverbal, what do you think the student is going to do? Shut down, right? So we need to not... make a concerted effort not to let our nonverbal cues, even though we may be disagree with what they're saying, even though we may be shocked by what they're saying or disapprove, not to let that come across in our eyes or in our face. Again, this sort of goes along with not interrupting, but wait for the speaker to pause before asking clarifying questions. So as they're sharing, as they're talking, they may say something that you don't really quite understand. Again, let them complete their thought. And then when there's a pause in the conversation, say, now, when you said this, I didn't quite understand that. Can you clarify that for me? Or ask a follow-up question there. But don't interrupt. Wait for a pause. As you're... in that conversation, one of the ways to show them that you're really engaged with them and that you're listening is to occasionally ask questions to ensure understanding. So one of the things that you can do is summarize. So when there's that pause in the conversation, so what I'm hearing is, and then you sort of put it in your own words, and am I hearing you correctly? So, okay, yeah, he's got it. Or, no, that's not what I mean at all. So, and there's sometimes that, again, you're relating to a different culture. So they may say something, you've taken it one way, being from a Western culture, and they're in the Eastern culture. No, I didn't mean that at all. So those clarifying questions are important. Or one of the counseling techniques that I was taught in college was just to mirror their last word. So they're sharing, and they're saying, and that really made me upset. And so you say, oh, upset. And that just saying that last word now gives them the cue to, okay, I will expound on that even more. Avoid making judgmental or rebuttal statements. Again, you don't want to let it show on your face, but you also don't want to say it verbally. Oh, I don't agree with that at all. So again, what's going to happen to the conversation? It's going to stop. They're not going to be open. They're not going to share. You're not going to get to where their heart is really at. The tenth thing is to be available. As Gwen was saying, they're spontaneous. So we've gotten calls at 2 o'clock in the morning from previous students who are out in California who, Jerry, I'm going through this. What do I do? Chen, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. No, I don't say that. Well, just a second. Let me wake up a little bit here. And then I really want to hear what you have to say. And so, I mean, you need to be available. You need to be flexible. You need to talk with them when they're wanting to talk, when they're willing to talk. It doesn't work so much in the hot cultures to say, well, let's schedule, can you call me back at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, Eastern time, and then we can talk about it. It's more convenient for me, but it's not convenient for them. So we need to be flexible, we need to be open, and I'm willing to do that. Secondly, 11th, we need to empathize. We need to, what does the Bible say? Weep with those who weep, rejoice with those who rejoice. So one of the things that a lot of people say that is probably one of the worst things that you can say is, I know how you're feeling. Because they're going to say, you don't know how I'm feeling, or at least they don't feel like you really know how they're feeling. A much better thing to say would be, I can only imagine how you're feeling right now. Isn't that much better? And then lastly, either make mental or written notes. When you're working with a lot of students like staff, I write notes of the names of their friends, the issues that they're dealing with, not while they're there, after they leave. I will make myself notes. And then when I have a conversation with them the next time, oh, well, how's Joe doing? I mean, you said that you were, or how did, you know, did you have fun playing tennis last Friday with so-and-so? Or that lets them know that, hey, you really were an active listener. You really are concerned about me. You are concerned about my life. You know who my friends are. You know those types of things. So make mental notes so that you can refer to them in the future. So any other suggestions for being a good listener? David.
Turn your iPhone off.
Turn your cell phone off. Don't take calls. That's an excellent one. If you're in a conversation with someone and your phone goes off, I ignore mine. Aren't you going to get that? Nope. You're more important to me than whatever that phone call is. It can wait. Excellent. Yeah. But don't get upset if they check theirs. So they may not be a good listener. We need to be the good listeners. Okay? Any other thoughts or suggestions?
I was going to say, I heard from another podcast, another response, that you can give to a person when they're not, in terms of a phrase to say, is it's understandable that you would feel that way. But saying it's understandable is a very nice way to let somebody know.
So you're not saying that you agree with it or disagree with it. You're saying, I understand. I think I understand, or it's understandable how you would feel that way. Okay? Anything else? Karen.
You have to be aware of the age factor. Something I've become very aware of.
Age factor.
Yeah. I had a student years ago that I was counseling, and I noticed she almost never looked me in the eye. Now, to Westerners, that says this person's kind of hiding something. But she was very aware that I was many years older than she. Plus, we were sitting across the table from each other. She felt threatened. She saw me as the big leader. And when I'd look right in her eye, I think she felt very threatened. Okay. So we finally talked about that. I changed the way I tried to meet her gaze. Plus, we quit sitting right across the table from each other. We'd always sit on a corner.
Okay. So, again, another, it's not just cultural differences, it's age differences and that type of thing that you sort of have to consider as well. Okay. Yes. Yeah, so sometimes side-by-side works. So you sort of have to play that one by ear. So some students like the direct eye contact. Others, you know, if you are sensing that they're uncomfortable, then maybe change the situation. Yes?
I think also culture has something to do with it. In Africa, young people, even your own parents, it's hard to sit face-to-face and be bold talking like, my children born here will talk with me. They will not, because there's this, somebody my parents' age or older, or even older sister, there's some respect that there's certain things I will feel uncomfortable saying boldly or communicating with that person. So culture have a lot to do with it.
So, yeah, if try to learn what is acceptable in the culture of the person that you're speaking with.
You were saying don't be distracted, but I remember that this woman was saying we can be doing physical things and then they might start feeling more comfortable. Like I would invite students to come and color Easter eggs and... So we weren't like face-to-face talking with each other. We were busy coloring Easter eggs or making the Thanksgiving dinner together. And I think getting to do something while we were visiting made them feel not interrogated, you know.
And that's true, too. So there are women tend to be, and please don't send me emails or things after this, but women tend to be multitaskers and can do more things at once than men. Men tend to be very one thing at a time. Some of the best conversations that I've had have been while we've been doing other things. What I mainly mean by not being distracted is if you're in a restaurant, don't be looking around at everything else that's going on around you. If you're in your home, don't turn on the TV and have something that's competing with you. If you can have a good conversation while you're doing something else at the same time, great. In fact, I think that's actually advantageous. My PowerPoint is not on there. So I'm just doing the first part. Okay? So, Christina, you're going to do the next.
Thank you, Jerry. I think you guys already touched in on how to invite other students to come along. I think ultimately we want to share the love that Jesus showed us and that we received. And I think... when you express that in what you do and what you say, they'll feel it and they'll be excited to join you. But sometimes using your differences could be advantageous and using your similarities could be advantageous. Examples of inviting other students to come along, I really like to invite them to come cook with me, or come do activities with me, even if it's simply like, let's go throw the trash together, or let's go pick up, I don't know, my library books together, or just simple things. They would like to join in your activities, in what you do day to day. Usually, they would like to join. And I think a big thing, I live with a few other roommates too, and we open our house on Friday nights for Bible discussions. And one of the things that we like to do at times, also because it's pressed for time, is people come, we start around 7 p.m., and we start with a potluck. We ask the students to bring food, too. That's one way to share what you have. Come, bring what you have. If you have any new things, can show us. When they arrive at our house, we say, oh, welcome, welcome. And this is also, if you know them already, a little bit already, say, oh, could you help me move the table to the side of this house? Oh, could you help me stir the pasta? And they really enjoy that. They really enjoy taking some leadership in helping around the house and to enjoy. Some students may not, though. Some people may just like to chat and stand next to you while you do the cooking or stand next to you while whatever you're doing. And that's fine, too. So can see how each student is different. I think one interesting thing is I remember a student told me, Mama, they call me, some of them call me Mama. Because I'm a little bit bossy. But he said, Mama, you know, I always know what to do when I'm at your house. I feel at home because I just look for you and you tell me what to do. So I think you can use your giftings in different ways. that same friend also shared with me too that he said, I feel like my family here is more than family to me than sometimes even my own family, because I feel a sense of belonging. So I think that's very important. Oh, you guys had something to share here? Can we record it for the recording?
The participation aspect seems important to the Chinese culture. All the Chinese friends we had, and in fact, I very rarely pick up somebody at the airport that they don't want to present us with a gift of some kind. In fact, the walls at the office will be decorated with some gorgeous banners. But at the same time, the idea, more so the Indian student I picked up last fall, he just fell in love with our family and everything. But he was also like coming from a home in India where they had, like, he said they'd lived in the same house for five generations, and he had cousins all over the city. So for him to feel attached to a family here was such a comfort zone for him. And we've had a great relationship. He loves to come over. And the other participation element that you suggested, they love to cook and stuff, but boy, if you've got a riding lawnmower, you can get your grass cut anytime you want.
That's great. Use your resources, what God gives us. Yes.
We have found that they love to take pictures. And especially at holidays, say at Thanksgiving, they have to have a picture of that turkey. But you have to let them do it. And they have to ask about this turkey. Like, why is it so big? But it's kind of neat to let them do that, because this is all so strange to them. And they can send these pictures back home.
Yes. Yes, thank you. Yeah, that's great. Take pictures with them. Let them take pictures so they can share in their WeChat moments. And that's good. Okay, I think, we can move along to the next.
So we've talked a little bit about listening skills. The next thing that I would like to talk about to, again, really get to the heart of the student is to ask good questions, open-ended questions. So we talked about that a little bit. So there's a resource on the IFI website called Starter Questions, or if you're an English conversation partner. So those are great questions to begin with, to start the conversation going. So instead of saying, so are you an only child? you would say, tell me about your family. So now they're actually talking. Say things like that are not going to be intimidating for them or make them feel uncomfortable. So tell me, who's your best friend? Tell me about them. What do you like to do together? So you're getting information about them as well as their friend. What do you like to do in your spare time? What hobbies do you have? When you're not studying, what do you do? And you can get a conversation going on like that. Describe your typical day to me. When do you get up in the morning? What do you do during the day? That type of thing. So all of those are not confrontational. They're very basic type things, but again, they're open-ended. They're not giving them the one word. Well, how was your day today? Good. Did you get along with your roommates? Yes. So you want to try to get your or phrase your questions of tell me about or you know where they're open-ended and they're actually you're forcing them to talk in order to keep the conversation going. So and once you get that initial rapport developed, then you can start drilling down deeper. So some of the questions that I like to ask is, what's going really well in your life right now? What are you really enjoying in your life? And they'll tell you that. What makes you happy? And why does it make you happy? What are you doing when you're the happiest? And so they can tell you about that. Some of the other questions, I always start out with a positive. What makes you happy? What do you enjoy? But then if we really want to get down to their heart and be able to minister to them, we can start asking questions of, are you frustrated about anything? What are you frustrated about? Or are you angry about anything? Again, that's not a question you're going to ask at the beginning, but as you develop a relationship with them. Another question, are you struggling with anything right now? And then if so, well, what is it? And then you can ask some follow-up questions. Well, how are you dealing with that problem? How are you dealing with that issue? One of Dr. Phil's questions, which is actually a very good question, how's that working for you? Then you can say, well, have you thought of other options? What are they? And then you can maybe share, well, have you thought about this? So rather than say, well, that you're doing it all wrong, you should do this, which is very confrontational, you can say, well, have you thought about this option? And you can start presenting some other things to them. And then ask them, well, is there anything that I can do to help you or to make things better? So that lets them know that you're interested. Another question, what is causing you stress right now? What is causing you worry? What is concerning you right now? Another, I think, a fun question is, if you could snap your fingers and change one thing in your life, what would it be? I have had a lot of fun with that question. In other words, what do you wish is different in your life and why? But if you could snap your fingers and change one thing in your life, what would it be? So those are all dealing with what they're going through right now. But you also, one of the other concerns of students is their relationships. So you can ask some questions about their relationships. How is your relationship with your roommates? Not, do you get along with your do you get along with your roommate? Yeah. Tell me about your relationship. What's the dynamic? Tell me about how you're living together with them. What's happening with your classmates? How are your relationships with them? Do you have any frustrations with them? How are things going with your family? So those are all things that are digging down that get you past the superficial and down to where they are at. Again, these questions that we're going through now are not something that you would ask at the beginning. It's after you've already developed a relationship with them. What are your hopes? What are your dreams? Where do you see yourself you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now? What are your long-term, short-term goals? Now, as you're talking to them, there's two counseling questions that I have found very helpful. So as they're talking, and especially as they're expressing an emotion, you can say, or if they tell you what their frustration is, well, how do you feel about that? Or what do you think about that? So you're wanting to know their feelings and their thoughts. So those are good things. And then, as we said before, if you're taking notes from when you were listening, you can ask follow-up questions. And then one of my favorite questions is, may I pray for you? So after they've expressed their emotions, their thoughts, their struggles, may I pray for you? And I have yet to have anybody say, no, that's okay. They're, oh, you would do that? That's awesome. So they've always been open and receptive to that. So we're sort of running out of time here, so I'm going to pass it on to Christine.
Okay, real quickly, before I forget, I wanted to share, too, inviting other students to come along. When a student has decided to become a follower of Jesus, yay, we're all excited. You can also start prepping them. So, anybody around you interested to knowing Christ? Oh, you want to do a Bible discussion together with them, or invite them to our house? We can talk about, you can start like building in their minds, like, oh, discipleship too, that going beyond in their relationship with Jesus, starting to help them see, oh, I can pray with my friends, or I can, yeah, talk about my faith with my friends too. That's something to add. So conflict prevention. Conflicts. It happens. We don't like them, but they happen. And I think a good point that Jerry brought up when we were talking is a great prevention is to just explain the rules. Explain like, oh, this is what we do in our family, or this is what we do in this house, in order for them to understand the why that they shouldn't do this, but just explain. So, for example, there's one student who loves to cook in our house. I remember letting him cook once, and then I felt like, oh, the kitchen's exploded. And so for the next times, I'm like, oh, I love your cooking. It's great. But let me show you right here. This is white color. Can you please make it white colored again when you finish? And I am very direct with it. But I think he's also like very open to it because I think that he feels the love. Ultimately, they need to have that connection, knowing that you love them and they have that relationship connecting back again. I know it won't work for everybody, but yes, praying is a very big part of conflict prevention. And of course, biblically, how to go to one person and talk about a circumstance instead of talking directly to the person could be one way as well. And then if that doesn't work out, going with more people, just like what Jesus explains. But because of time, let's go to prayer next.
So I'm going to back up a little bit here, too, and talk a little bit more about platforms to share your stories. You'll have those platforms, again, as Wen was saying, as you share your life with them, as you involve them in your activities. If you're going to go play miniature golf as a family, invite them to come play miniature golf. If you're going bowling, whatever activities that you do as a family, invite them to come along. And not just them, do you have friends? Because, again, in the hot cultures, they're very relational. So if you can, if you're having a birthday celebration for one of your kids or maybe your husband or your wife, then invite them to come along. Even better, find out when the student's birthday is and say, we'd like to have a party for you. What friends would you like to invite to celebrate your birthday with you? So that those are all opportunities. A lot of times, another thing that we use to open opportunities to share our story are photo albums. So if you have your wedding album, we have an album of when we adopted our daughter. They love to go through there, and they will ask us question after question after question, and it gives us opportunity to share our life. But when Jesus discipled the 12, he spent 3.5 years with them, right? It was life involvement. So the more that we can involve the students in our lives and they can see our lives and how we live, that is a testimony in and of itself. I remember one Thanksgiving after we had a house full of people, I actually had to take 2 trips back to campus. But one of them, I took the guys first and the girls stayed behind to do the dishes, bless their hearts. So I took the guys home and one of the guys was sitting next to me and he says, Jerry, I love your family. I want to have a family like yours when I get married. Still touches me to this day. But it opened the opportunity for me to say, well, you know, our family is based on a relationship with God through Jesus Christ. And it opened the opportunity for me then to share the gospel with him. So, just share life together. Now, the other thing that's important to give platforms to share stories, we want them to be vulnerable with us, right? What does that mean that we need to be? We need to drop our masks and be vulnerable with them as well. None of us are perfect. We're going to make mistakes, right? So when they see us and we don't react maybe how we should, we need to, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have said that. Acknowledge mistakes, be real, ask for forgiveness. Just the more things that you can do together, whether it's cooking, shopping, camping, fishing, sports, games, movies, be careful with that. Make sure they know your standards. Whatever you're doing, try to involve them and include them, and you'll be surprised how God opens the door for opportunities for you to share. So the last topic that we have there, is prayer, and we're sort of out of time, but there's 3 things that I do when it comes to prayer. For first of all, whenever I'm meeting with a student, whether it's one-on-one in a restaurant, whether it's in our home, I will tell the student, before I eat, I like to pray and thank God for our food. Is that okay with you if I pray for us? And so, again, I have yet to have anybody say no. The other thing that I will do is while you're talking with them and they're sharing with you, as I said before, ask permission to pray for them as they're sharing. And then when you see God answer prayer, praise God. So one of my students had to take his test to get his degree, and we were praying. He flunked it the first time. So the whole summer we're praying together, and then who do you think was one of the first people he told when he passed the test? Jerry, I passed the test. What was the first word out of my mouth? Praise the Lord. He answered prayer, right? Then the other thing that I do is I encourage them to pray for themselves. You need to go to God. God is there for you. He wants to hear you. He wants to answer your prayers. And then ask them to pray for you, too. So those things, I think, are all good when it comes to prayer.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay, so right now we are on the co-culture timing because we have to wrap this up. Yes. So we get back to the co-culture. But we love to, you know, you want to share more or discuss more. We love to be here and share with you. And I would say last thing is maybe just a few more questions and I can give these books away. Yeah? Okay. It's going to be the test. No. Okay. Maybe it's going to be easy. What would are three things that hot climate culture's characteristic? Remember that list? Three. Just name three. Ooh, relational, direct, relational? Indirect and group identity. Very good. Woo-hoo. Okay. What are two practical things you can do to for deeper sharing? It's just so easy. Two practical things. Be vulnerable yourself and ask open-ended questions. Very good. Woo! All right. And one last one. Majority of the OSU students are from which country? Warm-hearted, yes. But the 1040 window is true, too. Sorry. Okay, and that is all we have for today. Thank you very much.